A Blitz. KFNC Mont Belvieu, Houston. A Gau Media station. If you're not down with that, we got two words for you. Are you ready? Hey, you think you could tell us what to do? You think you could tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masters. This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow from Sam Houston Race Park. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz, hour number two. And apparently we're back on air. 713-780-ESPN is your number. 713-780-3776. You can also hit us up on The Blitz Facebook page. Find The Blitz. Click like. You're good to go. There's also Twitter, at Fred Fowler, at AJ is the real, at Jon Snow with a zero, at Degenerates 975. You can also text the show at 713-780-3776. And if the signal disappears again, you can just switch over to 94.1 because we're going to simulcast both of the next 2 hours on both stations. How about that?
How about that?
Good job, Jon.
You like that?
Man, these O'Brien apologists, I swear to Tebow, that they drive me nuts. Why do you keep on putting Brock on Bill? McNair put the pressure on Rick and told everyone they were getting a QB. Brock was the best prospect available in free agency. Give me the quote source where Bill says that he wanted Brock, because if not, you're just talking out of your behind. Frankly, I don't know how to talk out of my behind.
I mean, I do, but I just don't do it on air because we're
yeah,
in public.
It's gross. I mean, you do burp.
We're in public. Right. There's ladies right. here.
Yeah, I mean, sort of.
That would gross them out.
Yeah, but actually, you can go back and find the quote yourself. And I think,
and by the way, you can find those quotes. You can find the quotes where he tells you that Ryan Mallett and Brian Hoyer are both starting quarterbacks in the NFL. I mean, you can find a ton of quotes about him thinking that quarterbacks can play when they can't.
Yeah.
He's a buffoon when it comes to quarterbacks. So if you don't want to put the Osweiler one on him, that's cool. There's five other quarterbacks. You can say that this – and to me – saying Tom Savage is better is the starting quarterback after you've been through a full camp with Deshaun Watson and you said Tom Savage gives us the best chance to win. I'm not going to defend you on any quarterbacking decision going forward ever.
So, yeah. And
but his apologists are
boisterous. It's like he can do no wrong. And boy, you guys haven't paid any attention. Nobody's saying he sucks, and nobody's saying that the Osweiler move was a bad move at the time. It was the best move to make, but it also didn't work. And none of his quarterback moves have worked until Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
So how much he was involved in that doesn't really matter because he kept insisting that those guys could play. All right, speaking of things that can play, let's move on to the games tomorrow.
Okay.
Because those teams can play. Right now, Vikings.
These are real football teams.
Yeah, like with real coaches.
Yeah.
So Vikings at the Eagles now is at I'm still seeing -3.5. That hook really concerns me.
As it should.
At 3, I'd feel pretty good about the Vikings. I mean, there's a lot of reasons, though, why I might look the other direction here, and I don't have a play on this game right now.
What's the total today?
39.
Yeah.
Under still feels good.
The under feels good to me. That's probably all I'm interested in. I don't have a good feel. I think the Vikings win, but that I'm with you. At 3.5, I don't feel comfortable enough with them.
He just won an ESPN hat. I don't even have one of those hats.
No.
Hey, why is it we don't have those hats?
I mean, you could probably get one, but that's his hat.
I know that he won that hat. I'm very proud of him. Congratulations. He didn't get the sorry you're a loser thing.
I want his hat, though.
His hat's pretty badass.
Yeah, maybe he wants
I've got one like that, but it's black, and it looks, you know, gray doesn't look good on me because it kind of goes into my gray.
Minnesota's not playing New England Sunday, so absolutely not.
Yeah, no chance.
Jacksonville. We're about to get to that.
We were just about to get to that game, but we're still talking about the other one first. But the thing about the Vikings, I mean, I think they're going to win the whole thing, but I also believe that this isn't as easy as and not as simple as, okay, they're going to go in and take out the Eagles because they're an indoor team that's going to be playing outdoors, although the weather's probably not going to be a factor. That is not an easy place to play in Philadelphia. Philadelphia's defense is really good. They're probably going to shut down the run and make Case Keenum beat them. The one thing, though, and I think Keenum's going to make some mistakes, But I also think he'll make some plays. And the reason for that is the Eagles have been prone to giving up some big plays in the passing game. And I do think you'll see some guys running around open that Keenum will hit and get some play. But I think he turns the ball over a little bit too. I think the Vikings win, but I think it's close. And the one thing is, I don't know how the Eagles are going to be able to put up a lot of points because they're going to have to run the ball. And, man, the Vikings are very good against – they're good against everything defensively.
They are. But the Vikings – where the Vikings struggle maybe the most is – and this is why it's such a big deal now that the Eagles – remember when they made the trade for Jay Ajayi?
Yeah.
And we were like, why'd they do that? And, I mean, why'd the Dolphins do it? Why'd the Eagles do it? Well, he gives them such a different look than LeGarrette Blount does. And Jay Ajayi's got to be key for the Eagles, I think.
And he's got to catch some passes out of the backfield,
yep,
too.
If the Eagles are going to compete, if the Eagles are going to win, Jay Ajayi is going to have to be the feature. He's going to have to really have a breakout game. I don't know. You know, again, the Vikings defense is so stout overall.
Yeah.
I mean,
but you brought this up a couple weeks ago, and I've noticed everyone else nationally and locally talking about it now. But them on third down, it's just almost impossible to get a first down against that team. And that's where
How many third and ones, third and twos did New Orleans have and not convert?
Yeah. And, I mean, they're terrific on third down. And I honestly believe that. Their defense is one of the better ones that I've seen in a while. They're playing, and they're good at all three levels. They get pressure up front. Their linebackers are terrific, and they got a great secondary. And they have one of the best corners in football in Xavier Rhodes, and their safeties are terrific. So, I mean, but having said all that, the one way they can lose is if they turn the ball over, if you see a lot of mistakes out of Case Keenum. And I could see that happening because Eagles' defense is pretty good, too. I don't think they're as consistent, especially against the pass, as the Vikings, and I just don't know what you're going to get out of Nick Foles. And if you get last week's Nick Foles, they'll be in the game.
I love that four of the top five defenses in the league are in the playoffs.
Yeah. You're a defensive guy. See, I like points.
1, 3, 4, and 5. I just love that. That's awesome.
I'm a University of Houston guy. I'm used to the Kevin Sumlin teams that would score 50 points and give up 48.
Yeah,
yeah, that's my kind of football. Just don't bother playing defense. But no, I do like that, and I think
with all those teams other than New England, their defense is great because New England's usually you're one dimensional when you play New England because you're chasing,
right?
These other teams, they're all well, the Eagles are maybe an exception too because the Eagles were a different team when they had Carson Wentz, but the Vikings and Jags specifically are teams that they're where they are because their defense is so great. They are not great offensive football teams. And it hasn't mattered because they are elite defensively.
Hey, food trucks out here. Churrasco.
Oh, hey now.
Yeah. Let's move on to the other game where I that number has come down from 9 to 7.5. And I was ready to pounce on the Jaguars. I probably should have taken them at +9. But a guy, Fezzik, tweeted something out earlier this week that I found fascinating. It's basically the secret to beating the Jaguars' pass defense. Now, we've talked about this a lot this week, and I think we're talking about it with Lance. I don't remember if it was on air or off air about how you put Jalen Ramsey on Gronk and you put Bouye on Cooks and you just dare the white guys
to beat
you.
It's got to be Chris Hogan or Danny Amendola.
Yeah.
That's what I do. Jalen Ramsey
or James White out of the backfield or Rex Burkhead out of the backfield since he's apparently going to play.
People forget that Jalen Ramsey last season, as great of a season as he had, He was their nickel cornerback. I mean, he spent most of his time playing
till
nickel.
The end of the season when they finally put him in that one slot, and all of a sudden he just exploded.
But he can play there. He's got the size to be a safety. I mean,
there was talk in the draft whether he was going to be a safety or a corner.
To me, he is their best option of slowing down Gronk. And if you slow down Gronk and you can somehow limit their passing game to running backs, I think the Patriots are very beatable. I don't know what Jacksonville is going to do from a points standpoint. I don't know how many points they're going to be able to put up. At some point, Blake Bortles is going to have to throw the ball, and that makes me very nervous. But I think the Jags can hang with them in this game. I don't know that I would take them to win. And I'm with you. Even at 7.5, I'm not crazy about it.
Yeah. Because I could see a scenario where the Patriots get up 14-0, and suddenly Bortles has to throw the football, and it gets ugly.
But I would take. I would take those 7.5 points with Jacksonville long before I'd give 7.5 with the Pats.
Yeah, I about the story that Fezzik tweeted out from Sharp Football Analysis, and this is the kind of thing you know the Patriots are paying attention to. And by the way, we talk about the Patriots' defense. Like, it's not really matching up with these other defenses. But over the second half of the season, they were a top-5 defense. They were terrible early on, and they improved without getting new players.
You're talking about Jacksonville,
right? Not about New England.
Oh, New England, yes.
Yeah, and they didn't get new players. They just kept changing schemes, and guys started figuring stuff out. And they played really well over the second half of the season. But this column is really good because it talks about how when NFL are in standard 11 personnel, which one running back, one tight end, three wide receivers, the NFL uses that roughly 60% of the time. When you do that against the Jaguars, their pass defense allows a 39% success rate, 4.9 yards per attempt, and a 73 passer rating. So if you go out there with one running back, one tight end, three wide receivers against the Jags defense, they're off the charts good.
Yeah.
And if you line up with more than three receivers, if you go four, same thing. It's 5.0 yards per attempt and a 59 passer rating. Best in the NFL. How teams have beaten them sounds a little different. They, when teams line up in a 12, 21, or 22, any grouping with no more than two receivers on the field, the Jaguars' pass defense allowed a 55% success rate, 9.6 yards per attempt, and a 99 passer rating.
With more than two?
When you go with less, no more than two receivers on the field. So basically you go with two tights. You go with, you throw a fullback out there. And, I mean, that's amazing. It's an amazing difference. And you look at the teams that beat them. Well, the Titans basically went with two tight ends most of the time.
Yep.
The 49ers did it against them when they beat them. The Cardinals did it against them. So their losses were all against team that used that didn't use 11 personnel. And they basically, the teams that did use it, 63% of the time other teams used it. And so they were going up against – and so – I guarantee you these are the kind of analytics that the Patriots
know.
No
doubt. Well, also remember, though, and if I'm not mistaken, the Niners loss was late and the second Titans loss was late.
Well, the second Titans loss I'm not going to count because that was relatively meaningless for them. But still,
the Cardinals,
they did play their starters in
that
game.
The Cardinals game and the early Titans game, though, those were pre-Marcell Dareus, if I'm not mistaken.
Cardinals game wasn't, but I don't think he played in that game. Cardinals game was late in the season.
Okay.
And I just remember because that was one of my bigger bets of the year was on the Cardinals with the Jaguars going in there. But, yeah, week 12 was the Cardinals. So here's what the Cardinals did against them. We use that one. Using 11 personnel, 15 attempts, 27% success rate for 1.7 yards per attempt. That's a 43 quarterback rating. When they went with 12, 71% success rate, 153 rating, 13.6 yards. More than three receivers, 40%, 4.9, 77 rating. And one to two receivers, they used seven attempts, 71% success rate, 13.6 yards per attempt, and a 153 rating. So basically his whole premise is if you want to beat the Jaguars, this is how you do it. You don't go with standard alignment, and you have two tight ends in there. You have two receivers, no more.
Yeah, it's so interesting.
It's fascinating, right?
It's fascinating to look at that box score, too. And, you know, the teams you mentioned, they're mostly poor offenses.
Yeah.
You know, Tennessee is, I mean, they've got a decent run game, but for the most part this year they've been a poor offense.
And they don't have any receivers. Davis was hurt all year. He was supposed to be good.
Yep.
49ers, we joked about guys who caught passes against the Texans. Their receiving core, we've never heard of them.
Garoppolo was obviously a difference maker for them.
Yeah,
but they still didn't have any real talent.
No.
I mean, on the outside, and yeah, and I'm looking at the box score from this Jags Cardinals game, and Blaine Gabbert, 22 of 38 for 241. He had a 48 QBR. I mean, they just didn't. I don't know what they did. What they did right. It's pretty odd. Now. The Jags turned it over three times, which that obviously helps.
Right.
And they still
– I mean, that's the thing. You're going to have to force some turnovers against Bortles, but I think if you get a lead, you can.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he does.
Yeah.
So I'm less inclined to go crazy on the Jags like I would have been earlier.
I'm with you.
All right, we are going to take a very quick break. We'll have RJ coming up at 5:30, so that'll be fun. He was the first one to break that the Mad Bomber was on Ngannou in the UFC. I'm curious how much that number's moved.
And I don't think it's moved much.
Yeah, it was,
seems kind of
stuck right around
there.
180, right?
Yeah.
All right. Quick break. It's The Blitz on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1.
Going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. ACA could be tweaked, reformed, or repealed in the future. But for now, employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow from Sam Houston Race Park. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz, live here at Sam Houston Race Park. Live racing starts tonight, 7 o'clock. Come on out here. We will be we'll be here till 7, then I'll be here till 9 upstairs. So I whined enough to get an ESPN hat.
Hey, look at you.
All I want to do is represent our company. What's wrong with that?
Well, you look great.
Well, no, I don't.
I thought you have a hat like that.
No, I don't. I don't have a hat anything like this one. I have a couple of the older ones.
Oh, okay.
But they're all old and grungy now because usually when I wear them, we would be outside and it was 105 degrees. And once a hat gets kind of grossly sweated out, it's kind of hard to wear it anymore.
Gotcha.
So, so you had some stuff you wanted to get to.
Yeah, I've got some options for you. Well, let's start with this one. The FBI arrested a man in Portland, Oregon, who tried to extort $1 million from a celebrity over an altercation during a nude massage. According to court documents, Benjamin Kozoil tried to extract monetary payment from a popular entertainer. Throughout the criminal complaint filed by the FBI, the celebrity is only referred to as entertainer. So they never name the person. I don't know if they ever even say if it was a guy or a girl.
So entertainer could be one of us.
Yeah.
Except we're not in Portland.
I think this is a more high-profile entertainer than you or I.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah.
I don't like that. I'm against that.
Kozoil was asking for a $1 million payment from the entertainer or threatened to file a lawsuit in California that would negatively impact the entertainer's squeaky clean reputation, according to the complaint.
Oh, that's not us then.
So, no.
Yeah, we're safe.
Kozoil made repeated claims the entertainer physically assaulted him and sexually assaulted his wife in January 2016 during a nude massage. Wednesday morning, Kozoil was arrested after a search warrant was carried out. He was taken to the U.S. District Court by the U.S. Marshal's Office and made his first court appearance. The investigation has shown the entertainer was not present at the time and location these assaults allegedly took place. And although the manager, who is not identified, by the way, otherwise I would have done some research on this.
And been easy to find. Yeah.
He continuously denies any wrongdoing occurred during the nude massage. He did settle with the masseuse, Kozoil's wife, for $225,000.
Jeez.
Kozoil's wife is not being charged with any criminal wrongdoing, it appears, based on the criminal complaint against Kozoil. He acted alone. But the FBI was made aware of the extortion attempt on October 31st. And 2 days after the FBI learned about Kozoil's alleged involvement, they met with the manager and one of his attorneys at the FBI field office in L.A. And during that meeting, the manager told federal investigators that on December 25th, 2015, he saw a posting on the website Backpage.com for a nude massage.
Man, nothing good comes from Backpages.com.
No.
It's like Craigslist. Don't do it. Nothing good comes from that.
In January 2016, the manager contacted the masseuse over text message to schedule an appointment for a nude massage. The FBI determined the massage occurred on January 10th. The manager told the FBI he was disappointed in the nude massage provided by the woman and he'd expected to receive more, but he emphatically stated that he never touched or grabbed the woman during the massage. So, basically, this guy was hoping for some sort of a special end to
massage. Yeah, he wanted a rub and tug.
And didn't get it.
Yeah.
So, the nude masseuse's husband tried to shake him down in the hashtag Me Too era.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to be careful around there.
Or hashtag Mutu.
The masseuse, Kozol's wife, was also convicted in California for pimping and pandering. She was out on bail pending the appeal, but both are due back in court on January 24th. Kozol has been convicted in Minnesota for driving while impaired, domestic abuse, interfering with a police officer, depriving another of parental right by concealing a minor, and he's also been convicted of pimping and pandering. I don't know what pimping and pandering is exactly.
It kind of sounds cool.
But it ain't easy. I know it ain't easy.
Yeah, it's definitely not easy.
He was scheduled to 4 years in prison but was out on bail as well.
Pandering is easy.
Right. Yeah, pimping ain't.
No.
If I've learned anything, it ain't easy.
God, I don't know what – that does sound kind of cool, though. I'm up on pimping and pandering. P&P is what they call it. Yeah, I like it. I love being out here and hearing people yell at the TV.
I hate it.
Because you know the horses can hear them.
No, they can't.
No, they run faster. If you're yelling at them, they will run faster.
I don't get it.
Even if they're 500 miles away, they will hear it.
But I'm also not like a yeller and screamer like with any sporting events. I just watch them and like, all right, that's cool.
Yeah. I the only time I'll get really excited is if I know it's big.
Right.
Like if it's going to be like, and I guess my threshold for a big score is probably $3,000 now.
Okay.
So if I'm seeing something developing that's going to win me $3,000, I might make some noise. I guess we've got the sumo thing going on tonight too, because there go the sumo suits outside. Yeah, man, they got a lot going on tonight.
That's a big day.
Yeah, camels, ostriches, sumos, 50-cent beer, live racing. This is the place to be tonight. If you're into any of those things, that's a pretty good collection of things there. And food trucks. There's at least one food truck, so I'm guessing there's more. So get on out here tonight to Sam Houston Race Park. It should be a lot of fun. And actually, the traffic wasn't too bad for me getting out here. So, yeah, I know that 290 gets a little busy about now, but
it was manageable for me.
Yeah, well, you live like a block.
Yeah.
But, no, there's not an easy way for me to get here. And it was raining like a fiend when I left from downtown. But it didn't take long at all. So if I were you, I would come out here and hang out and win some money. What else you got? Do we have time for another one?
If we do, I've got one.
John, do we have time for another one or no? Oh, okay.
Okay. I got a couple DUI stories we'll share later on.
Oh, good, good. Those are always fun.
They're always fun.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking the 6 o'clock hour is going to be pretty non-sportsy. We'll have RJ next, and that usually we are very sportsy with RJ, especially with 2 playoff games and a UFC card tomorrow. But then we'll be non-sportsy for a while at the 6 o'clock.
All right.
All right, we're going to take a very quick break. Do not go anywhere. It is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
Well, hello.
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net. This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow from Sam Houston Race Park. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz live here at Sam Houston Race Park, getting ready for the opening night of live racing. And you know what that music means. It is time for the gambling guru of the universe, our good friend. You can follow him on Twitter at RJ in Vegas. It's RJ Bell, who not only is the gambling guru of the universe, he also is breaking news. He was the first guy to report that the Mad Bomber, the guy who made all the bets at the World Series, made his first bet since on UFC 220. What's up, RJ?
True enough. I'll be also got into a little trouble in Boston reporting on significant Jags money driven by some real suspicions about Brady's hand being worse than they're reporting.
You know, I got to ask you about that because, and maybe I'm a sucker here, but I never believe any injury that's reported about Tom Brady, because this is a guy who every week is listed as questionable or listed as doubtful, and he always plays. But I like with any Patriots, I'm almost to the point where their injury report is just it's a nothing when I am handicapping. I don't even think about it.
Now this is a fact. In the playoffs, this is the first game in Tom Brady's career that he's questionable or doubtful.
Really?
So he's questionable, right. But he's never been worse than probable any time in his playoff career. But he's questionable this game.
Interesting. So
that doesn't, to me, that's not what I'm reporting on. Obviously, that's just an objective fact. And I think that what AJ speaking to is at one point years and years ago, Brady was somewhat injured. They didn't put him on the injured list, and the Pats got fined or got reprimanded. So then for like six straight years, he had Brady as probable just to kind of push back at him and say, oh, if you're going to punish me for not having him on, I'm just going to put him on all the time. That's been kind of faded. That's faded away over the recent years. But AJ's right. In no way do I look at the official reports out of New England and trust those unequivocally. What I'm telling you guys is, and anyone who follows me on Twitter, and I think both you guys do, I would say in a given year, I probably say, you know, sources I trust say less than seven times a year, maybe every other month on average. So when I do, you know, I think I'm undefeated, as in I was right every time I've done this, but I might have missed one once or twice. But in general, I only do this when I trust what I'm hearing. And I heard from multiple people, Brady's hand is hurt worse than anyone's saying, and we're making major bets. We're talking tens of thousands of dollars on that fact. And all you guys got to do, go up to pregame.com, click on the Game Center or anywhere else you can get the odds. Right now at a book like Bookmaker, which is one of the biggest books in the world online, the line is 7, minus 110, minus 110. And there's no rhyme or reason why this line should be 7 unless Brady is less than 100%. And there's no rhyme or reason why Brady's missing practices. I mean, I was talking with your colleague Stephen A. today on our national hit, and Stephen A. is like, oh, you know, kind of like AJ, actually. Stephen A. and AJ had a very similar opinion, now I think about it. And I said, Stephen A., let me ask you this, though. How common is it for Brady to miss full practices during the week before the conference championship? He said, you know, that's a good point. So let me ask you guys the same question.
What's the question? I'm confused.
How common is it?
Oh,
for Tom Brady to be missing practices the week of the conference finals.
Yeah, it's especially.
It would have to be very uncommon.
Yeah, especially the Thursday practice, which is your one in pads, and it's your last, you know, last important one before the game. So, yeah, I wouldn't say it's very common at all.
So I'm confused because I'm not with you guys, but the general tenor on Twitter is, oh, this is nothing. Don't trust the Pats. You know, same thing you guys are saying. It's like, then why would he miss Thursday's practice?
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for that. But I would say this, if there's any team I could see sitting out a veteran during practice, knowing that he's going to be good to go during the game, it'd be the Patriots or it'd be Tom Brady, right?
But this is the first time ever.
Right, I get that, but is there any other guy you'd trust and say, oh, well, he didn't practice all week, but he tells me on Sunday he can play? I mean, you let him play,
and
right?
Listen, let me be clear about this, and I was very explicit on Twitter. I would lay minus 500 that Brady's going to play.
Okay.
That's not the question. Because if Brady didn't play, this line would be, a lot of people are surprised they'd be favored, but they'd probably be a two-point favorite, Pats with Hoyer. So if we thought Brady wasn't going to play, this line wouldn't be 7, right? It'd be, you know, 2 if we knew he wasn't going to play. So the line opened 9.5. Now, moving from 9.5 to 9 to 8.5 to 7.5 is not a big deal because, I mean, it's a bunch of moves, but these are not key numbers, right? Very few games end 8 or 9. To move from 7.5 to 7 – is a key move. And I'll tell you guys right now, if I'm guessing you guys guessed what the line would be when the Jags won on Sunday. What was your, let's go around the horn. Fred, what was your guess on Pats and the Jags, what the line would be?
I was pretty close to the original line because I had thought Pats minus 10 would be the number.
Okay, AJ?
I thought 9.5.
Why is the line 7?
Well, I think because people are now concerned about these Brady reports, clearly.
But if you read,
that's what it opened at 9, right? What's that?
Yeah, 9.5, yeah. But if you read, people don't seem concerned. Like, I don't hear many people saying, like, I'm out there on an island with the tweet saying this is a big deal. And you guys are the skeptics on this hit.
Well,
should be pounding the Pats.
I'm not pounding
the Pats because
I was actually hoping the line would go the other way, because if it got to 10 like Fred wanted, I would have been on Jags plus 10. And I'm honestly, if anything above 7, I still would play the Jags before I'd play the Patriots. So the line movement from 9.5 to 7.5, and we talk about, you know, major numbers and important key numbers to pass over all the time. 9.5 and 7.5, it's 2 points difference, but nothing big has happened really.
I agree.
So I'm but not looking to getting, I'm not looking to change my opinion on what I thought this game would be.
Yeah, getting a 7. Well, listen, if your trigger point of betting is plus 10 on the dog, you should lay 7. Like, if you're unwilling to take 9.5, that means you think the line is somewhere above 7. Because if you thought the line should be 7, you'd take 9.5.
I would have absolutely taken 9.5.
Okay, but you didn't.
I did not. Because I was hopeful it would get to 10. I may still end up playing the Jags, and as long as that number stays over 7, I may play the Jags. But
it's 7 now.
Oh, okay. Well, my book still has 7.5, or at least it did an hour ago.
And that's the thing. If you look at the sharper book, and this is what tells me it's a sharp move, because oftentimes, you know, what you'll see is the square books are doing one thing. And when we say square book, it's a book that takes smaller bets, that caters to the recreational batters. And listen, that's no cut on AJ. If you can be in a square book and you've got that in your portfolio, and then you've got sharp books in your portfolio, that's perfect, right? In fact, if you were only going to have 2 outs, the perfect way to approach it is 1 super square book, 1 super sharp book. And then typically, if you like the favorite, you play it at the sharp book. And if you like the dog, you play it at the square book. And I think that's a great way to do it. Now, what happens oftentimes is a square book, especially online, will kick out a sharp guy like AJ eventually once they look at his profile, his picks, and see he's probably playing all dogs. And if he's laying a fave somewhere, he's probably doing it somewhere else.
Well, I don't know if my books are sharp or square. I know they're often different, and I shop both of them against each other. Every time I'm going to make a play, I see where I'm going to get a better line. One of my books, which it would probably be considered the square book, has $10 minimums, where the other one has $50 minimums. So I'm guessing that's probably the sharper book that I play on. But, yeah, I whatever the line, whichever side I'm on, I always shop both sides just to make sure I'm getting the best line.
And just to be clear, to wrap up this topic, is I think Brady's playing. I also am open to the idea that he'll throw for 400 yards because – you know, Brady is Brady, and he's a special player, no doubt about it. Probably the best quarterback of all time. That said, if he is even 90% as opposed to 100, he still is an elite player, but he's not the same player he would be at 100%. So the fact this line is moving is a sign of skepticism about his health. It doesn't mean the Pats don't win. It doesn't mean he doesn't have a good game. It just means the odds of the Pats winning and him having a good game have gone down a little bit.
The Minnesota-Philly game line hasn't really budged at all. It opened at 3.5, I believe. It's still sitting at 3.5. Do you expect anything different to happen in the next 48 hours?
I got to get your book, AJ. I could retire in a year. So it is rock solid 3. I don't see a 3.5 anywhere in the world right now. And I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying is a vast majority of books it's down to three. So it's been dog money early, and that move happened a couple days ago. Dog money on Philly, and it really is a pros versus Joes. The recreational bettors on Minnesota, the Joes, and the pros on Philly.
I want to look back a little bit last week because after the segment, I was pretty much convinced that Philly was the play. But you also brought up a great point to sprinkle a few bucks on the Jags money line last week, and that worked out very well. Do you feel that way about either one of the dogs here, that they're worth a similar kind of play? If the Jags get the lead, do you feel as confident? Or do you think if Philadelphia gets the lead that maybe Case Keenum starts making some mistakes? Do you have any of the same sort of thoughts this week, or is it just now you're going to stick with the sides?
And let's be candid. One, last week was a great week. You know, if I ever, speaking of retiring, that might have been the one George Costanza style. I'm out of here because I really had a good feel for those games. I won't be betting either of these games. So, and it's a great lesson. And I know, Fred, you guys and AJ, you enjoy gambling, but you also really try to communicate how to gamble responsibly, you know, in a way that responsible to yourself, right? Not to society, but to your own bankroll. And remember, there's two games. The odds of the line being incorrect on one of the games are less than 50%, meaning that to win in the long term, you can always, I could imagine in the Jags game last week, right? I could have laid 2 points or whatever with the Jags. And imagine if I told you guys, hey, I'm willing to lay minus 110 and lay 2 points on the Jags. Would you have taken the bet?
I don't understand the question, RJ.
I think you guys are maybe watching the hot girls walk by.
We're at a horse park. I'm telling you, there's not a single hot girl here. But I don't think we have the best connection. But
the point I was making was, to forget the question for a minute, is you can bet a bad side and still win a game easily, right? And you can bet the right side and still lose. But over the long run, the only way to play and win is if you bet the line when it's wrong and you are on the right side. So that's an interesting way to think about it. The only time you can really bet profitably long term is if the line is wrong. So in this case, for the line to be wrong, you either have to believe the Jags should be, let's say, a 8.5 or 9 point underdog. And if so, then you lay the Pats -7. Or you think the Pats should only be -5, and then you take the 7. So do either you guys think the line should be -5 or below, or considering now Brady's, you know, reality of the uncertainty of his hand, do you think it should be -5 or below, or +9 or above?
I think. Well, are you asking which one? It's close. Which one is closer to being right?
No, I'm asking if I was asking you to create a line that was God's line, meaning this line you think would split the results 50-50 if we played a million simulations, what would the line be?
And this is with or without Brady?
With the reality as of today.
Oh, well, I have no idea. I have no idea. I mean, I would guess probably you could tell me if I'm wrong on this, but the fact that the number's gone the way that it has, I would have to assume there's been heavy Jags action. I mean, if it got below 7, there would probably be heavy Pats action. So I would say 6.5 is probably the best way to get even action.
Okay, so and that's a slight variation, but if we assume 6.5 is the true line, then you really aren't in a position to lay 7 or take 7. Thus, there's no bet. So, Fred, let me ask you the same question. If we were trying to split the result, not split the action, which is a slightly different question, but split the result, where half the time the favorite would cover, half the time the dog would cover, what line would you make on the Pats game?
7.5.
Okay. So if the line's 7, you can't really lay it or take it. It's not enough variance laying 110. So that means you don't want to play the game. So let's ask the same question, starting with you, Fred, on the Minnesota game.
I think the number is 3. That's why I'm not playing either game this week either. I think that's the perfect number.
Let me give you an example. last week when I had a best bet, a major bet on Philly, I thought the line should have been pick 'em. So when you think the line should be pick 'em and you're getting three, take off the rubber band. That is enough, right? So that's a great way for the – this hasn't been the most fluid segment, and I'll take the blame, but that is a great takeaway for the listeners, probably worth the pain of that, is when you make a bet, if you're trying to win, right? If you're having fun, it doesn't matter, right? But if you're trying to win, move the line, and key numbers matter, but just in broadly, move the line 2 points. If you think that's the true line, then take the other way. And if you think the true line is somewhere, in this case, going over again, Pats are favored by 7. So if you think it should be 9 or above, well, you want to lay it. If you think it should be 5 or below, you want or if you think it should be 5 or below, you want to take the 7. And if you think it's 5.5, 6, 6.5, 7, 7.5, 8, or 8.5, then you probably pass, because in the long run, if you lay minus 110, you need about 2 points. Now, coming off of key numbers, it's a little different, but in general, you need 2 points of edge.
So, RJ,
before we let you go, I want to tell you, I've now looked at both Five Dimes and BetUS. They're both at 7 and 3. So I apologize for misquoting the lines were.
But if you okay, that's your two books, yeah. So BetUS is going to be much more of a dog book, and Five Dimes is much more of a favorites book. So yeah, you've got two good books there because you're on different ends of the spectrum.
I wanted to ask you real quick about we talked about the Mad Bomber at the beginning of the segment, and you broke this that he bet on Ngannou in the UFC tomorrow, first time that he's shown up since the World Series. But wasn't he famous for going on a similar run with the UFC before the World Series?
Yeah, see, that's what was interesting is when we reported this, it wasn't something that got a lot of attention. But before he went on his Let It Ride run in the World Series, the only other bets that anyone was aware of that he made was like a streak of 9 straight UFC winners. So to me, you would think, well, maybe the guy knows something about UFC because he won so much in the World Series. But to me, the fact that he started off with those UFC winners, then he's quiet for multiple months, right? So what, November, December, 2.5 months, and now he's firing 6 figures just at one book. I don't know if he's bet anywhere else, but 6 figures on, let me just say this, before I tweeted it, my hashtag was I'm down. I don't think I've ever bet the UFC before, but I put $3,400 to win $2,000 on Ngannou.
Ngannou.
Yeah, I don't even need to know the name.
He's
a poker player.
Yeah. Well, I know that, but I actually have the phonetic spelling here because I don't follow the UFC, but I've got Ngannou. Is that right? Ngannou?
Ngannou.
I'm going to say it my way.
Okay.
What's anyone going to do about it?
Nothing. They're not going to do a damn thing.
Except if I meet him, and then I'm going to say Mr.
If you meet him, you better just call him sir.
Yeah.
That's the best move.
So, really. AJ, you know UFC. What's your take on this fight?
My take, when Fred told me that you tweeted out that, that's my exact take. I think even at minus 180, which I'm usually not looking to make heavy plays unless I'm getting minus 150. Like if I've got a feel on someone minus 150 or shorter, or a dog, obviously. But minus 180, that's pretty good value. I'll be playing that. I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm not playing at 6 figures heavy, but I am pretty heavy on Ngannou.
Well, I tell you, I kind of intrigued by the UFC, and I'm a big Joe Rogan fan, so I kind of get some of it residually through that. But I watched a few of his highlights to get the pronunciation, actually, on YouTube. And when he knocks the guy down and he comes with that hammer fist to the face, ooh, that doesn't look good.
He is a monster of a man. He is a... he's a special physical specimen is what he is. But the guy he's fighting, he's got, if he wins, it's the longest heavyweight championship reign in the history of the UFC. No UFC heavyweight champion has ever defended 3 times. Very few have defended 2. So this is a tough dude, and he's not going to go away easy. And he's a guy who I always, this whole run, I've said, oh, this is the time he's going to lose. This is the time he's going to lose, and he keeps proving me wrong. So he's got another chance tomorrow.
But let me ask you this:
But I'm hoping I'm right this time.
is this a sign of how good he is? Or is it a sign that if you're fighting at that level, that the strain of the training and the strain of the fight, the punishment of the fight itself, that it's hard to keep fighting at a similar level?
Well,
if anything, the fact he's fought at this level more than prior champions means he's probably susceptible to lose.
Well, no doubt. And he's now in his mid to late 30s, which is when fighters typically start to decline. There's a lot of reasons to think that he will. And obviously Ngannou he's just a mauler. I mean, this is a guy who, I don't care who you are, if he hits you, you're probably falling down. But I like I said, this is a guy who's been proving me wrong over and over again. And I think he sort of thrives on the fact that people that he always feels like people are saying that he's going to lose.
So last question, what are you seeing the current line being on the fight?
It's minus 180 now. Oh, what do I think the line should be, or what the line is currently?
Well, the 180 was interesting. What do you think the line should be?
The line I was hoping for was 150, and I wouldn't even play it if it was 200 or more. So 180 is kind of where I'm at.
Okay, interesting. So, you know, I'm hoping this baby runs a little bit because, again, just for the psychology of it, you always want to be sitting with a 170 ticket when it's minus 210, right? You feel better about it. So,
oh, absolutely.
But this will probably be my last UFC bet for a long while. So I'll either love it or hate it.
There you go. It'll be a fun night, though. Fun night of fights.
No doubt, no doubt. So, I know we got to run, but very last point for me. It also speaks, I think, a little bit to the Patriots and the idea of, I'm not a conspiracy theory, guys, but I think that the NFL wants the Pats to win this game more than any game outcome in the last 10 years. Because with all the narrative about the NFL's ratings down 9% this year, down, you know, almost, I think, more than double that in 2 years, if somehow the Super Bowl is down 10 or 15 million viewers and Jacksonville versus either of those NFC teams, you'd have to think that would happen. Some people say it doesn't matter who the teams are, but, man, how much negative PR does the NFL get for being 9% down on the year ratings-wise, followed by a Super Bowl like 10 million less than last year?
They'll get a ton, but I've thought all year long it was kind of overblown, the ratings thing, because television ratings are down across basically all formats. So the fact that the NFL would be down two isn't surprising at all.
Yeah, but it's not down 9%.
Well, in fact, but still, Fred, you and I looked at this. Like, if you look at the top 15 sport or top 15 television events of last year, I think 10 of them are NFL, or was it the top 20? 10 of them were NFL. The NFL's still doing fine relative to all.
Oh yeah,
other
but
TV.
If you're Warren Buffett and you're worth $70 billion. And if you lose $7 billion, you're still one of the richest guys in the
pissed.
World. But I can promise you, he doesn't want to lose $7 billion.
Oh, I'm with you on that.
All right, we got to wrap it up, guys. RJ, great stuff as always. Appreciate the time, and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you, guys.
All right,
that's RJ. And I had trouble hearing RJ early in the thing. It got better. It sounded like, I don't know if Jong, he was on ISDN today.
Yeah.
I was just kind of confused by what he was saying. I'm not going to lie.
He throws a lot of words together.
Yeah, I kind of got lost
sometimes
there.
He loses me in his words. But, we're trying our best. All right, got to tell you about My Computer Career, guys. Are you happy in your job? Are you happy in your career? If not, what are you waiting for? Why haven't you considered an IT career? And if it's because you weren't the best student in high school, that's all right. It's not rocket science. It's My Computer Career. See if an IT career could work for you. Go to mycomputercareer.edu. Take the free career evaluation today, and you could start your new life as an IT pro in as little as 4 months. You attend classes on campus or live online just twice a week, and you're going to get everything you need to start your new career. More than just a school, My Computer Career helps you get into the industry because they work with hundreds of employers that hire their students. My Computer Career is nationally accredited. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, including the GI Bill. Classes start soon, so make new year, new career your resolution. Take the free career evaluation today. MyComputerCareer.edu. That's MyComputerCareer.edu.
Answer that.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. ACA could be tweaked, reformed, or repealed in the future. But for now, employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.